for this evening, Larry L. from San Diego.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Larry Lay. I'm alcoholic. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. Did I hear the bell? So it's a pleasure to be here. I'm super grateful to be sober. This wasn't my idea, but like most things in Alcoholics Anonymous, I realized that acceptance doesn't always mean wanting to, and willingness doesn't always mean liking it. So, you know, this has been suggested before, and I don't know, some of you may know me, some of my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill and George are up front, and I've been coming to this meeting since 2010, and this meeting is near and dear to me, and I think I've had a service commitment just about ever since I started coming here, and it's a special place for me for a number of reasons, and they, you know, it's been suggested at times, and I'm like, no, I spoke there in 2010, we're good, and they're like, well, so my beautiful wife, congratulations, yes, on 10 years. She's extraordinarily clever, and so she suggests to my good friend, who's also my sponsee, who did the excellent job as the 10-minute speaker tonight, why don't you ask Larry to speak on the night that I'm taking my token? And I thought, oh, that's so sweet. She wants to hear me talk. And then it occurred to me, the reason why she wants me to talk is she's hoping I get it out of my system, and I leave it all here. I've been sober since March 23rd of 2008. Super grateful for that. I'm separated from drugs and alcohol for what I pray is my final time. I'm going to get into more of that later. I have a sponsor. He's actually sitting in the room tonight. He's a huge part of my life, and he's the reason that I'm standing here tonight. And George Martinez is also here, and he made me mention his name from the podium. He also had a huge part of my sobriety. Not as big as he thinks, but no, it's all just kidding. Anyway, so just to set the record straight before I start on my little spiel here, I want to, you know, she opened the door, the white elephant in the room. You know, she said I met her here in this room, and the truth of the matter is I did meet her in this room, and she's my best friend, and I'm super blessed to have her in my life, and she's my soulmate, and I can't promise that for everybody, but I can tell you this, if you stick around in Alcoholics Anonymous, good things never they'll never cease to amaze you. The truth of the matter is that we did meet in this room. I was the speaker coordinator, a position which I've held on to for dear life ever since. And I asked her to speak at the meeting. And so she remembers it a little differently than I do. And some of my friends remember it a little differently. Like, she had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And I've chased her through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous ever since. Like, some of my friends have a different recollection. I thought it was a little bit more, you know, suave, and they said I was circling her like a rabid dog, but whatever. We got engaged at the roundup. I mean, how cliche, but we did. And we got married, and, you know, we had 60 people in the bridal party, and 58 of them were in AA, and we live a great life today, and our life is centered around Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do my level best to take every opportunity to keep my mouth shut. And if something occurs to me about the way she works her program, I try to save those experiences and those thoughts for my sponsor. He says that's why we get together so often, so we can talk about her and the way she does her program. Anyway, so. Two things have changed. Many things have changed since we got married. We got married a month ago or so, 6 weeks ago maybe. By the way, I'm going to apologize to you in advance. I get pretty fired up, and it's going to be really tough to follow me, but I'll do my best. I always wanted to see how I looked in sign, by the way. It's pretty cool. Anyway, a couple things have changed since we got married, and I suspected that they were going to come. First thing is that the minute you put the ring on these are for those of you who aren't married. You put the ring on the finger, and all of a sudden the superpowers come out, right? The balance of power has shifted, like instantly, like S on the chest, and you still have a vote. It's just not the majority one. And I knew that. I knew that was coming. But subtle things have happened as well. Like, Things have happened in the home, like in the finances department, for example, like money. Like we have joint accounts, right? And when the money's in the bank, it's our money. But when it comes out of the bank, it's her cash. And make no mistake about that. Like if you see me out at the during the coffee break, like I still do this, right? Because if I come up with something in my pocket, I gotta be like, hey, sweetie, I swear, I don't even know how it got there. I just wanted a dollar for the basket. I don't want any trouble tonight. You know what I mean? It's tough. The other thing that happens is kind of different, and then I'm going to get into my little distorted little tale, but the other thing that happens is kind of different. I didn't see this one coming either. Something happens to their hearing. I don't know exactly what that is, but like I know she heard fine when we first got together. Like she responded to my text right away with little smiley faces, and now all of a sudden it's like, and I keep raising my voice because I'm thinking she's not hearing me. Like, honey, I have a vote. It's just not the majority one anymore. Anyway, her hearing is not my issue. She does listen to me. She tells me all the time that she hears me. She just doesn't care to necessarily follow what I'm saying, which is good. That's good. Anyway, so I want to say a special welcome tonight to Nick, Joe, Simon, Cole, Newman, Chad, Kelly, John, Robert, and Zachary. And I want to tell you from the bottom of my heart that I hope you find what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean that. Those of you who've been here and heard my sordid little tale, Rich and Jeannie, I love you both. You've heard my sordid little tale before. I don't harbor any delusion that I'm going to change the course and direction of anyone's life. But I will tell you this. The people who are new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I welcome you to this way of life. Because it's the greatest way of life I've ever known. And I mean that. And so those of you who are new, I absolutely want to tell you that this is the single greatest thing that ever happened to me. And so I wrestle with doing this talk in Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm kind of conflicted, because AA is by far and away the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And everything that's good and decent in my life is a direct result of the actions that I took in Alcoholics Anonymous, actions that I didn't believe in, actions that I wasn't particularly interested in taking, and things that I didn't believe would work for a guy like me. And as a result of having put all that together, remarkable things have followed in my life. And so if you're sitting here within the sound of my voice, I want to tell you that if you can't stop drinking and you want a new way of life, it is absolutely available to you. 100%. That's the one message I want you to leave here with tonight. If you are discouraged by anything else you hear tonight, please come back to another meeting. I want to tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely the thing that's responsible for the life that I have today. And I'm super, super grateful for that. I'm going to do my level best to say nothing that's going to alienate or offend anybody here tonight. I'm sure that I'm going to fail miserably in that, because I definitely have some pretty strong opinions when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't say that to be contentious. I just say that because it has been my experience that half measures have availed me nothing. So one of the reasons why I wrestle with doing this is because I don't want to say anything that's going to alienate anybody. I don't want to cause any friction. I certainly don't want to knock anybody out of the box. If you're here because of the third tradition or whatever, you're absolutely welcome. You're absolutely welcome to come to our meetings, to drink our coffee, date our women. If you're just here because you have an honest desire to stop drinking, God bless you. You know, for a guy like me, though, there's a lot more that's required. And for a guy like me, there are some definite rules that I have to follow, or I won't get to live this great way of life. And so the conflict that I'm facing is that I have to shout that from the highest mountain, because people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous like me were dying. So close to the message, we could have reached out and grabbed it, but just dying, because I was just trying to do AA my way. Anyway, enough about me. Is that about all the time we have? Let's wrap this up and go home, huh? All right, so my sobriety date is March 23rd, 2008. Super grateful for that. I have a sponsor. His name is Damian W. I have a whole host of sobriety requirements and H&I commitments, and Alcoholics Anonymous is responsible for everything good and decent in my life. And so the life that I have today is a direct result of the actions that I've taken. And I'm absolutely blessed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it hasn't always felt like that for me. If you're sitting in here feeling like Alcoholics Anonymous may not be the answer, grab somebody. George, Bill, somebody who's been sober for a long period of time, Rich, grab them after the meeting and talk to them, because Alcoholics Anonymous has absolutely changed the course and direction of my life. So with that being said, I will start off my sordid little tale. So I grew up in New York. I grew up in the 60s. And I don't know if anybody knows what was going on in the 60s, but we weren't just saying no in the 60s. There was no Nancy Reagan. I mean, we were doing it in the 60s. I mean, I know I'm a lot older than I look. I get it. Maybe not that much older than I look, but I'm older than I feel, that's for sure. So in the 60s, there was a lot of stuff going on, and I tried every one of them. There was no DARE vehicle. I mean, there was nothing to hold down our guilt. I mean, we were doing it in the 60s. I mean, if you had it, I did it. I T-double-O-K, I took it. I didn't care. I didn't bother to ask, like, will that impair my ability to drive a motor vehicle? I mean, I didn't give a shit. Oh, sorry. Anyway, I really didn't care. Like, if it changed the way I felt, bring it on. I was going to take two of them. Matter of fact, I heard not long ago that they had a pill for sobriety. Did anybody ever hear about that? Like, they had a pill to keep you sober or whatever? My first thought, there's a pill taker right there in the second row. My first thought is, wow, that's great. What happens if I take two of them? I'm just curious. What happens if I, anyway. So in the 60s, there wasn't a lot of discernment about drug use. There wasn't any public address announcements. I mean, we were not saying no to nothing. I mean, nothing. If I liked it, I would take two of them. I mean, I didn't have anything to hold down my guilt. I mean, that's just the way it was. And the 60s, in some ways, were 60s and the 70s were kind of a simpler time. I mean, I never felt bad about the things that I did. I just did them. I mean, I just did it and the wheels fell off. And I had a great childhood, from what I recall. I mean, my parents were separated when I was pretty young, and like there was never any lack of love in my house. It's not, I don't hold them responsible for it. There was definitely an alcoholic in that household, but that alcoholic was me. And I don't hold anybody responsible for the things that I've done or the choices I've made or the actions that I've taken in life. I can't blame it on my upbringing. I can't blame it on the babysitter that whatever. I mean, I can't blame it on nothing. I mean, I'm a big boy. I made decisions, and as a result of those decisions, I took some actions, and those actions had consequences. And so for me, the reason why I bring that up is that there was no DARE vehicle. Nancy Reagan wasn't just saying no. We just did it. If it made me feel good, I'll take two of those. And so I just started off with my self-centered little walk through life. I mean, I just did whatever I wanted pretty much. I mean, there was nothing holding me back from my drug and alcohol use. And so, by the way, before I get too much further into this, I'm a huge respecter of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Make no mistake about that. I have an alcoholic problem to my core. I've recovered. Alcoholic problem to my core. I want to see him say that. Sorry. Okay. But I have to be honest with you. I can't lie up here because, oh, Kathy, thank you for being here. I forgot to thank you. It's my mother-in-law. I love her. Anyway, if it made me feel good, I took two of them. And so you made me lose my train of thought. Where were we, bud?
Drugs.
Play it back? Drugs. Okay, yeah. All right, so from time to time, I don't know, 20, 30 years, I did some other things in addition to drinking. And as a result of doing those things, some of which I did on aluminum foil, I have a very difficult time staying linear from... I can't necessarily follow a path. So if I go off on a tangent, don't worry. Sit tight. I'll be back. Anyway, so the 60s were a simpler time. I had a great upbringing. I mean, I knew I was loved by my family. I never wanted for anything. I never felt a sense of ease and comfort. I was one of those kids who was wound a little tight. And so when I was 16 or 17 years of age, I started to drink. And then as a result of drinking, I got drifted into some other things that I really fancied. And some of those things prevented me from sleeping for, I don't know, weeks at a time. But in any case, I treated my problem through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor was really clear about this. When I came to AA, I tried to distinguish myself, and I tried to make myself different, and I said, yeah, but I'm really a drug addict, and I'm not an alcoholic. And he was like, listen, you got a lot of problems. But why don't we just do this? Why don't we focus on your alcoholism? Let's see if we could treat that problem and see if everything else doesn't get a free ride. And so damned if he wasn't right. But the reason I bring that up is because I did a lot of other things. Woo! If you could... I did a lot of other things. I like to do things that keep you up late at night and sorting things that don't need to be sorted. And woo! I mean, I do those things. And like, I go to the casino for, I don't know, 6-7 days at a time. By the time I get home, I peel off one of my socks like I'm peeling a banana. You know what I mean? Don't look at me like you never walked around in those socks, those shoes, and felt them squish when you were walking. Because I think I've seen some of you there. Anyway, in any case, not terribly proud of any of those things, but that's just the reality of my situation. So I did drugs from time to time, I don't know, from 1979, 80 till 2008, I guess. Few, maybe, couple, right? Anyway, damned if he was right. As a result of having treated my alcoholism, everything else did get a free ride. I went through college, I got great grades, I ended up summa cum laude, like I graduated with honors, and there was always this hole in my gut, and I always felt less than, and I don't know why that is. I mean, in looking back, I guess, in hindsight, like everything I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's by looking back, I kind of get it now. I had a spiritual sickness in my gut, and as it was a soul sickness, and so I didn't understand that at the time, and so the outward appearance of that was that I did a lot of things in a lot of quantities that probably would have killed a lot of people. And I did them for fun and for free, and I did them in great doses and great quantities. And so I never, like I listen to them, I feel different in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to this day, like when we read more about alcoholism. It's like, listen to all those methods that we have tried. I never tried any of those methods. I mean, why would I? I mean, I had a solution to life's, you know, the way life made me feel. I had a perfect solution, and probably if I didn't have to deal with the consequences of those actions, that I probably would still be treating my life's problems with those solutions. But in any case, so where was I? Oh, that's right. 60s, that's right. So I lived in New York until I was like, I don't know, 25 years old, and I got a great job. I was in a public accounting firm, and graduated at the top of my class with honors, and I got a job working for a big eight firm. And so the problem with a guy like me is that you can only keep this situation at bay for so long, and then you tend to like act out. At least that's the way it was for me. And so what would happen is I'd hold it together for periods of time, but those periods of time would get shorter and shorter, and eventually I'd yield to the imperious urge to pick up a drink or a drug again. And for a guy like me, that's catastrophic. Because I don't go out, like, quietly. Like, I don't have one or two drinks and let's go home. I mean, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I don't even know why people do that. I mean, let's do it until the wheels fall off. I mean, I take it to the nth degree. And so as a result of my behavior and my actions, I had a real problem getting to work on time. Like, I was a great worker when I was there. I was always pretty attentive. I was pretty energized when I was there, probably because of all the cocaine we did in the 80s. But in any case, be that as it may, I did work pretty good when I was there. My problem was that I couldn't get there very consistently. And so I heard one of my bosses once clearly told me that, hey, you're the best thing we've ever seen. You do more work from Monday through Thursday than most of us do all week. And I thought clearly that what that meant was take Fridays off, right? And maybe an occasional Monday, right? You'll make it up when you're here. Apparently that's not what he said. In any case, what happened to me is that great job that I had, they suggested that it would probably be a good idea for me to move out to the West Coast, where I would probably have a little bit of a geographic, I could move back closer to my family, and maybe my problems would go away. I think at that time I had just was on the precipice of losing my license. That's a pretty good word to use. Anyway, just about ready to lose my license. They were getting ready to, they were thinking seriously about what they were going to do with a guy like me, and they suggested that I should transfer out to the West Coast, and so I did. And so I thought that being reunited with my family was going to be a huge, you know, I was going to be able to keep my nose to the grindstone and live a better way of life, and the problem is that I brought my problem with me. And so the spiritual sickness that I suffered from was my constant companion as I came out here. Like, and make no mistake about this, I'm not a bad guy. Like, I had a good upbringing. I never doubted. My parents separated when I was very young, but I never doubted that I was loved. I was well loved by both my mother and my father. I never grew up wanting anything. I was never beaten as a child. I should have been flogged, but I was never beaten as a child. So there's nothing that I can blame my alcoholism on. I believe that this is somewhat of a genetic thing. It's a genetic predisposition. I don't know if we get it from, you know, how it comes down. I just know that what I did to treat it was the only thing that's ever worked for a guy like me. When I came out to California, I thought that by just being closer with my family and maybe getting a gym membership and maybe getting a different set of friends, that my life was going to be good. And the problem is that I bring me with me. And I don't treat the spiritual sickness. And so what happens, I act out in a variety of absurd ways. I didn't know any of that then because I hadn't had the opportunity to look at our literature. So I continued my self-destructive walk through life. By the way, he's doing pretty good keeping up with me because I know I'm pretty fired up right now. Anyway, great job over there. Great job. Okay. Anyway, so I come out to California. I'm going to be closer to my family, which is like completely out of, you know. And I continue to do my self-destructive walk through life. And there's a lot of collateral damage. Like I swear to you, with God as my witness, I never, ever set out to tear my mom's heart out one more time. I never did. I was raised better than that. I never intentionally went over to her place and took money out of her purse. And I never manipulated her to come with me to get my car out of impound because of my irresponsible behavior as an addict and alcoholic. Never. But that's kind of what happens to a guy like me. It's a shameful way to live. And so there's a lot of guilt and remorse that goes along with that. And the only way that I know how to treat it at that point in my life is with anesthetizing myself with more drugs and alcohol. More of what brought me to that point is the only thing that I could do to make that big hurt go away. I'm better than that. I know that that's not the way to treat my family. I know that when my sister invites me over for Thanksgiving dinner, she tells me three times, she says, remember, we're going to have dinner at 3 o'clock. You're going to be there at 3 o'clock, right? And of course I'll be there at 3 o'clock. And like, I'm offended that she's even asking. Like, how could she even question me? How dare you? You know, like that kind of shit. Why would you even ask me? By the way, she's lying. It's 4 o'clock, but she knows I'm always late. So she's setting us up for success, right? Well, I'm the kind of alcoholic that shows up 3 days later. Like she says, stop and pick up a quart of milk. I show up 3 days later without the milk. That's the kind of guy I am. And I don't set out to hurt my family like that. And I never set out to make my mom cry. I never set out to break the heart of the woman that happens to be my hostage. It just goes along with the territory with a guy like me. And I was raised better than that. I don't want to live like that, but I don't know another way. I just live like that because that's the only way of life I've ever known. So fast forward, where are we? You're doing great. Okay, perfect. All right, so fast forward. I'm going to cut through a lot of time because I want to get to the good stuff. So I probably continue that self-destructive walk through life for another 14, 15 years. And now by this time, it's harder and harder for me to keep a job. And so a guy who graduated from college with the highest honors now is barely employable. I can get a job. I just can't keep a job. Keeping a job is way too tedious for a guy like me. Like I'll show up. I'm a casino guy. Any casino guys out there? Yeah, I knew it. I know. And if you, some of you didn't raise your hand. I know I saw you there once or twice. Anyway, I'm a casino guy, and I love that kind of shit. It's like the devil's playground, right? So a guy like me, up all night, you know, doing what we do, little substances, right? Something on aluminum foil now and then. By the way, the aluminum foil thing, I think I mentioned that already. I have a tough time tracking, so please forgive me if I kind of bounce around. Anyway, so where was I? I was doing cocaine, wasn't I? Oh, no. Oh, casinos, okay, yeah. So what happens to a guy like me is I kind of have a shift in personality. My whole perspective and my outlook on life changes, and so I have a different master at that point, and I'm in the grips of something, and I can't break myself free. It's not that I'm a bad guy, and it's certainly not that I'm an idiot. I mean, I'm a college graduate, for God's sakes. I'm smarter than that, right? I'm not a bad person. I don't set out to hurt people. I don't set out to, like, not show up for work for 2 days running and then finally call in and act like it's their fault, right? And, like, what? Like, yeah, I've been sick. I fell in the shower so many times, I can't even tell. I lost track. Anyway, so at that point, I was homeless, and I was trying to keep the job. I worked for a bank. Banking is the business, by the way. If you ever want to do drugs and keep it a secret, work in a bank. They never suspect that. And so, like, I was a vice president at the bank. I had keys to the place. I don't know why they gave me keys. I showed up at 9:30. Who needed keys, right? Everybody's already there by 9:30. I'd cruise in like I'd own the place, you know, like, I'm sweating. I mean, I've obviously been up all night. Like, I haven't, you know. And I'd walk into the president of the bank's office late for that weekly meeting one more time, right? I'd close the door behind me because why wait for him to ask? You know he's going to ask you to close the door behind you. He's going to get a piece of your rear end. How do you say that in sign? Okay, perfect. Anyway, so I just shut the door. I mean, I just let him let me have it one more time. I mean, I didn't set out to do those things. And so finally they got kind of tired of me. And, you know, I become unemployable. I'm one of those guys, I don't know about you, but my bottom is pretty low. And so, you'll hit your bottom when you stop digging. I kept digging. I've got the bulldozer out there. I mean, I'd run it aground. I mean, I was unemployed. I was unemployable. I had no car. I was living in the back of my friend's garage, no plumbing, right? And the hostage that I clung to, I mean, you know, my insignificant other, I mean, we hated one another, but we were comfortable, right? I mean, she hated my guts. I hated hers. We stayed together for years through thick and thin, right? And in any case, I wanted to manage her life like nobody's business. Anyway, so what happens to me is I could finally get acquainted. Like, I became an unlicensed dispenser of unlawful pharmaceuticals. So there were supply issues. When you do the quantities that I do, you have to monitor the supply, right, and the quality. I thought it was a natural fit. So I became a dispenser, right? You didn't have to be authorized or certified or anything, for Christ's sakes. I mean, you just have to get enough to whatever, and, you know, you get the picture, right? Anyway, there's only one problem with that. Sounds like a great idea. You could regulate the quality. You never run out of the supply, right? You kind of funds itself at some point, right? The problem with that is, like, it's kind of like having a rat sell cheese, right? Because I kind of like to do that stuff, and I kind of lose track of where theirs left off and mine begins. And so I could never kind of work the finances out. And so I wasn't very successful at that, but I did it for years. And so from time to time, like, I was living in the back of a friend's garage. Some friends had me stay in their place out in Ocotillo, of all places. And, like, these were people that I sold to, and they would be like, you know, have you ever thought about going to treatment? And I was offended by that, by the way. How dare you tell me I should seek treatment? I mean, for God's sakes, I was just personally wounded by that. In any case, so they suggested to me that my life had been, I boxed myself into a neat little corner that only God could get to. And so not because I thought it was a great idea, not because I thought you could fix me, but somebody suggested, why don't you go to the San Diego Freedom Ranch?
San Diego what?
Freedom Ranch. Freedom Ranch? Okay, anyway, San Diego Freedom Ranch. So San Diego Freedom Ranch, 45 miles east of El Cajon, for anybody who's counting. 2 miles past where God lost his shoes. Any case, so they painted a different picture of the Freedom Ranch. They're like, you know, it's a county-funded program, but, you know, they've got a golf course there, and a golf course. All right, golf course, cool. Yeah, yeah. Got some livestock, right? Okay. Yeah, I thought, well, I'll go out there and do that, right? How bad is that? So they dropped me off, and the next thing I saw was his taillights spinning out of the driveway, right? And I'm like, oh, this isn't exactly what I thought it was, but okay. Anyway, so I ended up in the Freedom Ranch in 2000, and my life was in a pretty dark spot. And so the San Diego Freedom Ranch only wanted to help me. And so they wanted to help me treat my alcoholism, and I met a lot of lifelong friends there. And so what happens to a guy like me is, if I don't treat my alcoholism, at some point it's going to demand treatment. There's only two effective treatments for alcoholism that I've ever found. One is alcohol, and the other is Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was in that terrible place, and I don't know if anybody, I pray that nobody's in this place, if you're within the sound of my voice, where you're just not willing to embrace AA. But I was in that terrible spot where, like, I wanted a different way of life, but I certainly wasn't willing to accept the drastic proposals outlined in that book. And so I tried to do my little recovery game, I wanted the results, but I didn't want to put forth any of the effort. And so they were pretty clear at the Freedom Ranch that if you don't work this like your life depends on it, you will not be successful here. And I thought, well, that's not, you know, there's a lot of guys here. I don't know anybody in here. There are a lot of guys who have been, like, incarcerated and stuff, who are way tougher than me, and, like, they thrived in that environment, but I wasn't too cool with it. And I thought, like, you know, 12 steps, this ocean beach yoga stuff, God, capital P, I know what that means. I mean, like, this is not necessary. It's really not necessary. I mean, 6 steps, I'm a college graduate, for Christ's sakes. I'll do it in 6, right? So anyway, what happens to a guy like me is I don't treat the underlying issues. And so there's a matter of time. It's like tick-tock, tick-tock. If you're sitting in this room tonight within the sound of my voice, make no mistake about this. I believe, my opinion, disregard if you'd like, we are sober by an undeserved gift of God's grace. The problem with that is you have no idea how long that gift will last. There's a grace period associated with that. And by the time that grace period wears off, if you haven't taken some action, and it says a vigorous course of action, and done something to replace that, you will drink and use again. It's just that simple. But I never embraced that thought. Like, I always thought that a better way of living and maybe a gym membership and a different girlfriend, I mean, I thought that if I could change and arrange the external circumstances of my life in such a way, I wouldn't need to drink and use. I was confused back then. I had no idea that I had a problem that centered in my mind. I would never, ever have guessed that. I mean, I was a college graduate, for God's sakes. I'm not an idiot. And I was ending up in places. I was homeless. I was ending up in jail. And guys like me don't thrive in closed men's communities like that. I'm not that guy, right? I'm the kind of guy who breaks rules there. Like, I don't understand your code, right? Oh, God, I thought we were getting, okay. I don't understand your code. Like, I don't get it. Like, you can't give your, if you have an extra sandwich, you can't give it to a guy if he's black. I mean, how do I know that shit? You get beat up. I mean, what do I don't know that. Like, where is that written? There's all sorts of stupid rules there. And they give you a pair of shoes when you get there. They're 2.5 feet too long for your feet. I mean, they do that just for spite. I don't thrive in those environments. I hate ending up there. But I'm like, I can't connect the dots. Like, they tell me it's because I'm drinking and using, right? And if I don't do those things, I'm going to be fine. But the problem is when you remove those things from me, that's all I got. That's all I got. That's the only thing that's ever made me feel normal. If you take that away from me, I'm extraordinarily vulnerable. I mean, my life gets real bad. I get crazy. Anyway, I didn't know any of that before I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for what I pray is my final time, which was in 2008. In 2008, I came back to the Freedom Ranch for the third time. And by this time, they were damn sick of me and my shit. So they basically said to me, look, we're tired. I said, look, the newcomer's the most important person at any meeting. And they're like, you're full of shit. You're not a newcomer, man. You're an AA shoplifter. You're like an AA pimp. Like, what the hell are you doing here? There's a shopping cart in El Cajon with your name on it. Why don't you go grab it? And I'm like, that's pretty harsh. I mean, I'm here. So anyway, what happened there for me is that I went through some court stuff. I mean, I went through the misfortune of going through some court stuff where I got myself in a bit of trouble. Apparently I had sold some stuff to an undercover DEA informant. How about that? Not a good thing. It was not a good day in the life of Larry Lay, I'll tell you that. They end up sentencing me to the Freedom Ranch. And so it's my third time there, and people are so fed up with my bullshit they can't even see straight anymore. And so they're like, look, if you don't want to be here, just go. We don't even care if you stay or not. If you're not going to do the work that's outlined in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to continue this merry-go-round. One more time. And at that point, I'm 48 years old. And it's no longer cool. I'm sleeping in a numbered bunk wearing other people's shoes. It's not cool anymore. And I finally got to the point where somebody loved me enough to tell me the truth about myself and my situation. And that man told me that if I was willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, he'd go to hell and back with me.
What was that last statement?
He would go to hell and back with me. I don't know if that signs well.
The statement you said before.
Oh, if I was willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. It loses something in the translation. Anyway, he said he'd go to hell and back with me. But there are no guarantees. Now, at that time in my life, I was really looking for some guarantees. Like, you want me to do a whole bunch of work on the off chance that good shit's going to happen? That's not my bag. You know what I mean? I want like written assurances. And he's like, no. He's like, I got a spiritual experience as a result of doing the work outline in that book. He goes, but who knows? A guy like you, you better pray there's a God because you're going to need one. And so he really talked to me like that. I was super, super resentful at the time. And, you know, he says he came up at a meeting. You know, the man was a trusted servant. And I know that today looking back. But the reason why I say he's a trusted servant is he had absolutely no business being there. He had no business being in that room that night because God had given him everything back in his life. Everything that was good and decent in his life had been returned to him as a result of the work he had done in Alcoholics Anonymous. But he had harbored some delusion that by helping me, it was going to help, somehow help himself. And so he says, I asked him to sponsor me. It's possible. I was suffering from auditory hallucinations. I hadn't slept well since the 80s. I mean, I may have asked him anything. It's entirely possible. I could have, right? But he latched on to me like he got the Amway eyes, right? Like, as soon as the words were out of my mouth, he's like, great. And I mean, he was all fired up for Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, the first thing we did when I got down from the... They kept me at the Freedom Ranch for like 15 months. It's a four-month program, right? So they're like, you're not leaving. And I would like, I do that march up to the door, knock on the door, office hours, you know, like, knock, knock. Larry Lay, what do you want? You have to tell somebody who tells somebody who tells somebody. I'm here to talk about my exit. Exit, and all of a sudden, uproarious laughter, and the door slams. Like, what kind of shit is this? Like, this is like against the law at some point, right? Like, you're holding me against my will. I mean, how long do I stay here? And they're like, until it's time. Slam the door, right? Anyway, so my first year in sobriety, my sponsor, he saved my life. He really did. He never asked me what I thought. Never. He never cared. Didn't give a shit. Like, he'd be like, I'm picking you up at 7 o'clock, be standing out front. And I'm like, like, I'm going to say, well, you know, I'm really tired. I've been working all day. Like, maybe we can make it next week. We've already done one this week. And, like, the door would fly open, and he'd tell me to get in. And, like, I got the pitch, right? I'm pissed. Like, he's not listening to me. Clearly, he's not considering my feelings. I'm like, you know, Damien, I've been doing this for, you know, I've been three meetings this week. And he's like, I've been swinging a hammer on a construction site since 5 o'clock this morning. I raced home, got changed, and I'm picking you up. What were you saying? And I'm like, oh, God, never mind. Forget it. What meeting are we going to? That's what I'm saying. Anyway, he never asked me, like, what do I think? He frankly didn't give a shit. I mean, he had what I had at one point, and he didn't have it anymore. I mean, he was filled with the passion and the power of God, and that man saved my life. I mean, I kick and screamed every step of the way, like I fought back. Alcoholics Anonymous is as a result of having taken the actions outlined in this book, my life has completely changed. Like, I was a guy who could not stay sober. Could not stay sober. Didn't even want to stay sober. I didn't want to stay sober at all. It was never my thing. Like, I don't come here harboring any delusion you're going to be able to fix me. I come here because I have absolutely nowhere else to go. I'm not running towards the light. I'm running from the fire. Shit's gotten bad in my life one more time. It ain't a good time to be Larry Lay. Apparently, there was some discrepancies over some amounts owed or for some things that may or may not have been purchased, and shit was bad, right? And so I'm ready for a new way of life. Absolutely. Let's go for a new way of life. And so he never asked me what I thought. He didn't care. I mean, he knew what he did. And he said, basically, we showed up at a Saturday morning meeting one day. Like, he picks me up. I said, oh, great. We're going to go for breakfast. Maybe a little ride out in the country, right? And so they're talking amongst themselves. It's a bunch of old drunks in a beat-up old house in Encanto. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting choice for a meeting, but okay. Maybe we're going to go for a ride after this. He's going to, you know, take me to the, you know, we're going to go out and do something. And so they're like, I mean, a bunch of old drunks, right? Sorry, guys. Anyway, apparently there's some conversation at the door, right? This is my first week out of treatment. I'd been up there 15 months, right? I was working in the office. Great job. And anyway, there's talking between the things. They're like, well, apparently there's somebody who needs to be, you know, they need a service commitment, and somebody has resigned, stepped down. You know, there's somebody who needs to be working in the kitchen, getting there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and his hand flies up. I think, God damn, that guy, what a guy he is, right? He works all week long, 6 o'clock in the morning. He's going to get over there and flip pancakes and serve drunks. I'm like, God bless him, what a good guy. And he's like, you're going to be here next week. I'm like, what are you talking about, me? You raised your hand. He goes, I raised it because I didn't see you raising your hand. I'm like, oh, great. That was my first commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me to go to as many meetings as I could and get a commitment at every meeting I went to. That's frankly why I came here to get this commitment. He said, if you don't get a commitment at every meeting you go to, I'm going to get one for you. And he goes, and I guarantee you, you're not going to like the one I get for you. So I was like waiting for a job like speaker coordinator. That's cool. I can do that one, right? I don't want to do butt cans. I've just been doing that up in the Freedom Ranch for 2.5 years, right? Anyway, it wasn't 2.5 years. One of the things I'll tell you before I guess I'm almost done. Thankfully. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story. One of the things that happened for me is when I got down from the Freedom Ranch, this is kind of a long story, but I'm going to try and tell it quick. I had been up there for 15 months. I was working in the office, made some lifelong friends, and I owe my life to the San Diego Freedom Ranch. It's the power of God that keeps me sober, but if it wasn't for a place where I could go to do the work that was necessary, I wouldn't be standing here tonight. I'm clear about that. So I get a call. I get a call from Mike in the office, and he's one of my close friends. And so I'm about 18 months sober at the time, and he says, hey, Larry, how you doing? I go, oh, great, Mike. I want to tell him how great I am, you know, how great I'm doing, doing great at work, making all kinds of money. And he's like, well, guess, good, good. The reason I'm calling is I had a guy up here looking for you today, and I gave him your number. And I'm like, oh, cool, who was it? And he goes, San Diego homicide detective. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you broke up. I thought you said you gave him my number. He's like, I did. And I'm like, oh, great, thanks, Mike. So anyway, he called me, and they arranged to meet with me. And so one of the things that happened when I was newly sober is that I had sold some stuff to a guy, and my phone number was on his phone. And apparently he had killed his girlfriend after he had purchased something from me. And he made it look like a fire, and he was going to get away with it. And so they met me there. I'm going to do it as fast as I can. He's mean. So they met me at Yvonne's. So I was real. I said, okay, yeah, I'll meet you there. And I was so full of fear. I'm like, Damien, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. I'm going to leave my car in the parking lot, so full of like self-pity, right? And he's like, just hang in there. Just don't worry about it. Just God's got you. And I sat down with the detectives, and they were looking at me, and like a little girl comes running by, and she was obviously on something, and it was like, oh, my God. And she was like a mess. Like, I know those girls. I dated those girls. And she's like, oh, my boyfriend's at the motel, and I need $10. I'm like, oh, God. And so I look at my wallet, and I take $20 out, and I go, just get out of here. We're talking about some important stuff. Please leave. So they looked at each other, and they were looking at me, and they were like, you know who we are, right? And I'm like, I've only been sober for a year and a half. I know you're detectives. Believe me, I'm not that far from the problem. I get it. I know the haircut anyway. I seen that haircut. So he's like, yeah, so we're here to talk to you about a homicide. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I get it. And they're like, you were nice to that. You're pretty nice to her. And I'm like, yeah, I know. That's all right. I just want her out of here. She's driving me nuts. So anyway, they're talking to me about the fact that he said the circle that you ran with was not a very impressive group of people. And apparently no one is willing to talk to us. And so I'm going to do it in two. So they sat me down and they told me that they couldn't get anybody to talk to them.
And so, what was that statement?
They couldn't get anybody to talk to them. Nobody was saying nothing, which is the code in those kind of circles. So I remember I sat down and they were asking me, I knew that I was the one who sold them something. And I knew that's why my phone number was on his or her phone, that he had made the calls to me shortly before he killed her. And so I remember talking to my sponsor on the way over there, and I'm saying, you know, this isn't good. I've seen too many episodes of Law and Order. I know how this plays out. Like, they're connecting dots right now. Like, I just got sober. This is not right. I mean, God didn't get me sober for this, right? I'm going to have to do time. This is crazy. And so for some reason, like, when I sat down, I was overwhelmed with a feeling that I never felt before, that everything was going to be okay. And I never felt that before. And I had just recently done the sixth step. And so for some reason, the feeling came over me like, if I have these defects of character that I'm supposed to be entirely ready to have God remove, how is he going to remove them? Or how is he going to think I'm entirely ready if I'm still using them? And so if I lie to save my own ass, isn't that the same way that I've always behaved my entire life? And so for no other reason than that something had happened to me as a result of having taken these actions in this book. Something had happened to me that changed me from the inside out. I was no longer that guy. I was so sick to death of myself. I couldn't live with myself one more minute. So they asked me, and I said, absolutely. The reason why he was calling me is because I used to sell him drugs. And they looked at each other, and they're like, you are not the guy that we were expecting to see here today. And I said to them, if I'm not willing to be, if personal consequences stand in the way of me doing what's right, I am no better than the guy you were expecting to find here today. And so if I don't get anything else from Alcoholics Anonymous over a sincere desire to want to lead a better life, I am overpaid. Alcoholics Anonymous is by far the single greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I'm not a guy who stays sober on fear and fellowship, and I do say some stuff from the podium that's pretty controversial. I'm not a meeting makers make it guy. I'm not a 90 meetings in 90 days guy. I don't advocate writing letters to your disease or putting shit in your God box. I mean, I believe in working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as it's outlined in this book. It's about trusting God, cleaning house, and helping others. It's about reaching my hand out and helping people when I don't want to. It's about showing my gratitude, which, by the way, is a verb, in case we're unclear about that. And it's by the actions that I take in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not about my words. I could say a whole bunch of shit up here at the podium, but you follow me through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to see how I live. Alcoholics Anonymous is by far the second greatest thing that's ever happened to me. The first thing is sitting in the first row. But she wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. I just did what I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was doing my, I did the most unscientific search for a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous that anybody's ever done. It was disgusting. People were disgusted with me. Anyway, my friend said, if you sincerely want God to deliver you a woman, why don't you stop looking? Why don't you just serve Alcoholics Anonymous and let God solve the rest of your problems? And so my prayer for you tonight is that you get from Alcoholics Anonymous what I got. Thank you very much for letting me share.